You would have made a good ranger, brother. You would have.
Wow,
You remind
that's the good, that's the greatest compliment I've ever had
you
in my
would.
entire life.
From Kansas City to New York City, from planet Earth to extraterrestrial life in space, a podcast with no equal, engaged in unconventional warfare through your speakers and headphones. This is a show about embracing the suck, conquering your demons, and finding God in the face of adversity. Chris Tonto Peranto.
Switch is on. Motherfucker, I'm gonna shoot you in the face.
Ian Scotto.
You know, Ian and I have been dating for a long time.
You are now tuned into the Battleline Podcast.
The Switch is on Battleline Podcast. We have a very different interview this week with Jason Ellis. Probably not someone you'd expect to hear on the show, although he has been doing the rounds on different podcasts, different shows. We get into all different types of stuff, and I think you guys are going to dig it. Don't go anywhere. Before we do, I had a few things I wanted to recap quickly. I was telling you, I saw Oasis on Labor Day. Giant stadium, you know, a lot of the audience, of course, knows, you know, I'm a huge rock fan, of course, have my own rock channel. This was unlike any show I've ever seen in my life, because the fact is, man, like, American crowds are have just gotten very boring at stadium shows. And it's been like that a while. Half of this crowd flew in from the UK to see Oasis. Two nights sold out at Giant Stadium, and tickets were not cheap. And everybody was up the entire show. Everybody was into it, man. Like, it was like going to a show in Europe or going to a show in South America, which I've always wanted to do. It was that type of a feel, man. So it was really cool. I just wanted to say that.
No, it's cool. And for those that listen to this show, know that I don't go to concerts because I'm an old boring man now. But Ian always keeps me apprised, and you sent me that video, and it is
awesome.
And Oasis. When you told me Oasis, to me, when I think of Oasis, it's somebody we would listen to in Iraq, them and Coldplay, that at the end of the day, we would put on Oasis or Coldplay.
Oasis is such a better band.
And they are. No, they are. No, you're right. I'm just saying. I was saying the conversation, man. But
you know, because at least me, and I'm probably wrong in this, right? Because I know that they play stadiums and shit. To me, Coldplay's like a one-hit wonder. They have one song I know. Oasis has like 10 songs that most people know, or a lot of people know. In the UK, they're the Beatles. They are.
No, they remind me. It reminded me of a simpler time of, and Oasis always does. Whenever and they're, you know, their big hit, Wonderwall, is one of their big hits, but that is one that would always bring me down after on the road for all day. And I, so whenever I hear it, it's one of those songs that takes me back to good memories. And to see that they're still out there, and I said, even
well,
Asher,
they're
I,
out there for the first time in like 20 years, not really the, still out there.
And the Gallic, well, it's, they're still there. I mean, they're
yeah,
still,
but I mean, there was
disappear.
A huge gap, and that's why you can't get a ticket for under 250.
And the Gallagher brothers are actually on stage together. Because back when I was, you know, when they were popular, and I was, you were probably 10, and I was in my 30s.
I was into them.
30s, but they, remember they had that big spat, and they actually went
they
on.
They still, I mean, this is the, this is why it took them 20 years.
MTV Live and who, I don't, was it Liam that walked off the stage, and
I think
Noel had to do the whole, I still remember watching that, man. I remember, well, and I didn't know what the big deal was, because to be quite honest, it's Noel standing, I don't remember who's who. I'm sorry, Gallagher brothers. My
Liam
bad.
Liam is, who's I would just, say the more punk rock sounding guy, right, and Noel has the more traditional,
and is actually the one that's that plays. And Liam's a front man. Noel can be a front man, but he does everything. To me, if I look at him, like, Liam is a front man. He's a Jim Morrison. He's that kind of front. Anul is the power behind the throne that does everything, that could do everything else, play, write, and sing. And so, but what I'm getting at is just for even for me, that I'm not a big rock, you know, I listen to music, but for me to know that much about a band, obviously the band impresses me because I don't know that much about bands. I don't follow them like you do. So just to see that they're out there, it makes me smile because it means that to me, good music that I grew up is still out there and it's still extremely popular. And that's what I thought was cool when you told me and you showed me that video. And that's good to hear because I love those guys. I did. And I love them. I have great memories with their music. And that's how music should be.
Yeah, I'm curious what's going to happen, man, because all they played was New York, LA, and Chicago, and that's it. And I don't know, you know, some people are going to say there's a money grab. They're just going to do those dates and they're out. I don't know if they're going to play anywhere else. I mean, that's why I was like, I have to go. Well, I have to see this.
Didn't they play in the UK? Like,
but I mean, in the US. In the US, it was just New York, Chicago, LA. Well,
can you imagine if they're doing a world tour? That would be so. And how they're old as me now, dude. If not, aren't they in their 50s? And they're
probably
old.
I think Liam's younger, but yeah, Noel probably is.
I mean, can you imagine? If I was that age and that popular, I'd be like, you know what? Those are the good cities. That's all we're going to do. Cause then they got to go to Wembley, and then where else are they going? They're probably going to
They're doing others there, but I mean, there's no one who does a US tour like that anymore. Everyone plays everywhere. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's no other band who would just go, we're doing three big cities and that's it. And that's why, I mean, on the train there, half the people on the train are from the UK. You just heard British accents. And I was like, why didn't you go to the UK show? And they were it was impossible to get tickets if I wanted to pay a fortune. And I'm like, dude, I'm paying a fortune. I just spent $250 on these. They're like, no. Like you'd have to pay like thousands. I'm like, well, this is the most I ever paid in a show ever. And I was like, but I have to say, and I'm not even the biggest Oasis fan, but I was just like, if I never get to see them, it to me, it's like I bailed on seeing Prince at Mohegan Sun and I'll never get that again. And so if this is the last chance, I was like, I have to have that memory. And it was very worth it.
That's cool. And it's cool that the good music is still out there and people still want to see good music and they still sound great. Even that little video of you two, and that's, I love every time that I would, and I never went to a concert, guys, but
you've never gone to a concert.
No, not an Oasis concert.
Oh, okay. I was like, really?
No.
I know you haven't in years.
I used to have to do security at concerts. So I was right there on the front stage. Man, and this is old bands, but I used to do a lot of security before I went in the military.
But you went as like a spectator to shows too, right?
Dude, when you're doing security and you're on the front stage, you're a spectator. You ain't doing shit.
You're not looking at the band though.
I am. Oh, fuck yeah, I am.
I'm just thinking of the guys across, you know, with the, crossed arms and looking at the crowd to make sure fights aren't starting.
Dude, those are the 6'5" fucking big. I'm not that big. No, I'm right off the stage. So if somebody rushes, I'm one of those guys. And I got to see U2 like that, which was actually pretty cool. I saw that in Tacoma. And then This Is How Old I Am, which I still thought was cool. And they were awesome, was Kansas. REO Speedwagon was another one. And this is when they were big. Yeah. And they were, Kansas was, and they sounded exactly. I was like, this has got to be recorded. This has got to be a track. And
but they weren't doing that back then.
No. And they were, I remember the Kansas drummer though, because he always would have his shirt off in between when they would be doing a little, either a slow song and they'd be doing a ballad or something. There wasn't a lot of drums. He would run off the stage and he would just do a ton of pushups and then he'd run back on all jacked up. So he was all muscled out for because all the girls are up front screaming. But that's what I'm thinking when I see that Oasis video you show me. It's like, man, people still out there sounding like they do in studio and playing their own instruments. And that is freaking awesome. Cause I don't want that ever to go away. And you're scaring me with all the AI shit. I'm like, man, we're not going to have anything.
Truthfully, right. It is going to, like, as you say, as a guy who doesn't attend concerts, it is going to go away. Just like movie theaters are going to go away. If you don't want to see it to go away, and I'm not just saying you, but everyone in general, you've got to go out and support, because it will go away. And then people will complain, why are there no more movie theaters? Why are there no more bookstores? Why are there no more concerts? Well, if you don't go out and support that stuff, not just you, but the audience, you know, it will go away. And everybody will be entertained by a screen at all times.
I got the bookstores and the movie theaters covered. Love movies. I'm a movie guy. You know this.
But and dude, I have a friend who's a huge movie guy, goes to movie theaters, and he's like, but now I got this device. I can watch all my TV. I'm getting rid of my movie pass.
The popcorn smell. You cannot be a movie theater. You got to go. If you want to see a good movie, you got to go because it's the atmosphere, getting a popcorn and getting a big drink and going with your kids and sitting in there and watching good previews. I still love that about movies, watching the previews. Then the movie comes on and being able and then going to get some nachos and some what's the chocolate covered raisin. I like raisinettes. I know I'm gross. Yeah. Nobody likes
it. I can't hear. Here's the I mean, I will say this, and I'm definitely going to see Spinal Tap 2 next week when that comes out, as much as Rob Reiner is a pain in the ass. politically. But I mean, I will pay for a movie ticket, which is extremely overpriced at this time. I am not paying like $15 for a popcorn.
How much does movies cost in New York now? What does it cost to go to the theater now?
I think like 16. It's a lot, man.
I Midwest, and we go, you know, I got a 10-year-old. We go to matinees, so we're still going to matinee. And we're in the here in Fort Scott, I think I pay $5. $5 for a ticket.
I hate going to a show in the middle of the day. It feels like a wasted day. No, you have to go at night.
You have to be a father. When you'll get to that, it's a fatherhood. Let's go to the matinee. And the kids love it because we go there and we just have a good time. And it's a bunch of kids. And so I do go to more of the, I do, I, we go to the, all the, we go to the action movies, the superhero movies. We tried to, we didn't do Superman because I'm not hearing great things about it. We'll hold off on it, but we go to all the kids movies. And then if there is a good adult movie out there, then we'll go see that as well. You got to go to movie theater. And even the dinner movie, I still love the dinner movie theaters. I love those, man. Go in there, eat dinner and watch a movie and have somebody serve me some pizza. Hell yeah. I'm going to the Draft House. Go to the Alamo Draft House.
Have a drink. Yeah, there's one of those in Yonkers by me. Yeah. Last thing I saw other than that was I saw F1. I thought that was really good.
Was that good? I didn't see that.
I dug it, man. I mean, anything with Brad Pitt, he's great, man. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention before we get to Jason, and we have to mention, of course, is that the week this is airing is 9/11. This will be airing on 9/9. So in two days, 9/11, 13 years since the attacks on Benghazi, 24 years since 9/11, 2001, of course. You know, you guys have heard me talk about this on the show if you're longtime listeners. I mean, I remember being at the highest point of Manhasset High School when the planes hit the towers, seeing the smoke from the towers. One of the like unique things about being that age in New York, you know, not even in New York City, but we were that high up that we were able to see the sky, not the skyline, but the actual smoke. And I just remember the confusion. I have family friends who perished in 9/11, like Chris Quackenbush, who to me at the time was like an older man. And you look back, you're like, he wasn't much older than I am now. And everyone's old when you're, you know, 15, however old I was, 16. And then, you know, Benghazi, before I even met you, man, I mean, I was super focused on Benghazi because of the fact that I met Glenn Doherty very briefly, but then just the debacle, the foreign policy stuff. And I don't know if you saw, there's a new podcast that's being launched about Benghazi called Fiasco Benghazi. And I don't know much about it. It's being hosted by this journalist. It's kind of like an NPR format, but it seems to be getting like a lot of traction. I listened to the trailer, and I can't say if it'll be good or not. You know, I know he didn't really interview you guys, and based on the trailer, he interviews people that were on the ground, but more so the locals. So I just feel like it would have been nice to get your perspective. I think it's going to be talking more about the foreign policy stuff, but I'm like, you could have had Sarah Adams on to talk about stuff. Seems like there could have been one of the guys from there who's on the show whose voice I didn't recognize. So I was like, maybe this is one of the Delta guys. I don't know. But anyway, I mean, I at least got to acknowledge that. And for you, man, 13 years since the day of that happening.
Yeah, I hope those that come out that don't interview us are usually trying to still poke holes into what we've been saying for years. So I hope it's not that. I really do. And I really hope that, but it generally is this far down. People are still trying to make it an issue where it's become, hey, these guys haven't been, these five guys, and then Sarah, and then, you know, others that have come out and testified, and they haven't been telling the truth for 20 years, and we're going to find out about
it.
Kind of like
I don't think it's that just because I hope you guys aren't mentioned. You're not mentioned at all. Not positive, not negative. From the trailer, I hear them talking to a few locals. They're playing clips of like the news media, how they covered it. And they're playing clips of Obama, Hillary. So I mean, just being honest, I don't think it focuses around you guys.
Time will tell. Yeah. And the locals, you know, the locals will also, I'm sure, validate a lot that we said. And also, it was a fiasco for them because it was a terrible foreign policy. Running weapons to terrorists or friendly militias in Syria so they could overthrow Assad. I mean, that was the main reason why we were there. But regardless, other than that, and I didn't know there was a new podcast out, I won't listen to it. Remembering and having, you know, we have a function coming up. Tig's having something in Nashville. Tig and Oz and Jack, and I don't know if Boone's going to be there. Boone's like me. He doesn't like to fly anymore. So if he has to fly, he doesn't go, which I don't blame him. But, you know, Cheryl Bennett, that's Ty's mom, and Greg Doherty will be there. We haven't been together in the same room in years. So that'll be very, very therapeutic. It'll be nice to see everybody. And it's also nice because we've all buried the hatchet in the last couple of years. So we're not fighting brothers anymore. We're good. We're loving brothers again. To me, this year, it feels a little different. I'm not as depressed. I'm usually start to get depressed around now, which is normal. I feel a little bit better. Not saying I still won't. It still gets to me a little bit. But it's something that, like, you have to live with. And our guest Jason Ellis talks about that as well. You know, you get up, you suck it up, and you live with it. And I've learned what the feelings are now that are going to make me depressed. I learned what's going to happen, and I'm going to get angry. I know it's coming, so I can plan for it. And that, I think that's what's helped me this year have a little bit more, be a little bit more optimistic and not be as depressed as I generally am. But we also have a great movie, and I love that it's out there. I love that, not because we have a movie and it's cool, it's because it will always be remembered. And more people still love to see it, and more people love to watch it and remember it. And it's not so much watching it now and being like, that damn Hillary. It's more of watching it now and got people saying thank you, you know, and prayers to your Rona. And that's cool, because that's what I always hoped the movie would do over time. And it did.
It's weird. I will say, though, it's weird, like, because I see it and I'm sure you see it. We could post anything about Benghazi, something that has nothing to do with politics, and you will still get those comments every time. And it, as someone who has nothing to do with it, you know, it bothers me too, because it's more than that. It should be remembered for way more than that.
And it's getting better every year, where it's less of the hate and more of, hey man, God bless, thank you, and remembering Roan. The focus has gone to remembering Roan and remembering Bub and remembering Sean and remembering Chris. And that is awesome. And that is, I love that. So, we're going to see what it's like on 9/11 when I'm at this function there in Nashville for Tig. But we'll see. Maybe it'll all come crashing down. Maybe it won't. Who knows? But right now,
in terms of what? In terms of like my
mental state. You know, I mean, I feel awful, or it may be the exact opposite. Who knows? I haven't really done anything other than I've done a few speaking events on 9/11, but it's usually go speak and I'm out, because I don't want to hang out. I don't want to talk to nobody, and I'm out. And I'm flying home. This is different. I'll be on site for a while, so we'll see what happens. But I'm glad that things have worked out how they have, where they still can be, and even more so honored. And people know Roan, and people know Bub, and people know Chris, and people know Benghazi, and people know Sean, and people will always remember them. And man, whenever I do a post that is Benghazi related, or Roan, or Bub related, or Chris related, on social media, it blows up, and blows up in a good way. I mean, you just get a few haters on there, but for the most part, it's extremely, extremely positive. And to me, that's a good thing, and that's what I always hope for. And so I'm happy. I'm happy that it's progressed to the point it is now, where it's not regressed into people hating and making it all right wing, anti left wing, or anti right wing. Right wings are liars from the left, and it's become Roan and Bub and sacrifice and selfless service and how people and veterans and people that have sacrificed their lives for others should be remembered. And that's that's good. That's important, man. And I know it's gone that route and I see it and that makes me happy. So definitely.
Yeah. So just remember that this week. Remember both 9/11s, of course. I mean, this is major day for people listening. Major day that changed America, foreign policy on both fronts. So with that, though, we're going to go over to Jason Ellis. There's some laughs this interview, but there's also some just very real candid stuff. So before we do, Fort Scott Munitions is a manufacturer of multi-federal patented solid copper and brass CNC spun ammunition. It's designed to tumble upon impact, TUI, and soft tissue, leaving devastating wound channels for faster bleed out and quicker incapacitation. This ammunition was originally developed to innovate and improve on the standard of military grade ammunition design. It was found that not only did the TUI ammunition outperform competitors in the self-defense industry, but it quickly became apparent that it would be a top contender for hunters alike. With the ammunition being CNC spun, the tolerances are some of the tightest on the market, ensuring that you receive the same results with each pull of the trigger. Fort Scott Munitions is available throughout privately owned businesses in all 50 states. You'll get the best deal through us, though, when you go to FSM.com and you use the promo code BATTLELINE for 15% off your order. One word, BATTLELINE, only available to listeners to the BATTLELINE podcast, FSM.com, promo code BATTLELINE. All of that is in the description. Fort Scott Munitions is a proud supporter of Chris Paranto, BATTLELINE Tactical, and the BATTLELINE podcast. For those of you who clicked on this just to hear Jason Ellis, if you listened to the whole intro, I appreciate it. We weren't going to not say anything, though, for an anniversary of 9/11.
No, hell no. Especially for someone that was actually in and part of a battle for 9/11.
Absolutely.
So y'all can go to hell if you skipped over it, you sons of bitches.
Well, with that, we're going to get over to Jason Ellis. Joining us on BATTLELINE podcast for the first time, Jason Ellis, host of the Jason Ellis Show.
Yes, bucket
list.
Which
we're now calling Ellis 2.0. Former pro skateboarder.
I'm not former.
So current pros, because I know you're instructing skateboarding, which I've heard you talk about.
Yeah, but I just turned pro again for Boonie Skateboards.
Oh,
I get paid.
Wow.
To be a skateboarder, I have to make content. I'm not going to win a contest ever again, but I get paid to skate. So I am back, baby.
That's awesome, man.
So back to being a pro skateboarder and also embarking on a tour for the stand-up comedy. There's plenty of stuff we can get into. The first thing I was going to say, man, is I had a long career, you know, behind the scenes at SiriusXM, which is actually where I met Chris. I never really crossed paths with you because I was New York City. You were LA for the most part. But I did work with a guy who became a really integral part of the show at the very end. And that was Andrew Gruce. And it was always hilarious hearing you make Gruce do like rap battles because he's the most like stiff guy in the world. And it was a very funny part of the show to me.
Yeah, he's a weird dude.
Yeah, so I just figured I would bring that up, man. We never really crossed paths, but many years while you were there, I was there. I mean, and you were there pretty much from like the inception of when it started to really take off.
Yeah, I mean, I was there before Howard Stern, if that makes any sense.
Which is wild.
That's better than Howard Stern anyway, bud. But me,
each to their own, you know?
Yeah, well, I still don't get people that like that crow feature.
I thought that his show was great. Yeah. I loved Artie Lang.
I loved Artie too.
Yeah. I know people say different things about him, and I'm just like, have you been 70? Because I don't know what it's like to be 70. I know that 28-year-old Jason and 53-year-old Jason do a different show, you know?
Actually, that's where I got to know you is just when I was deploying all the time. I deploy and you know, that's what we listened to Faction, you know, the guys I was with the regiment and then went to the agency. And of course we listened when this was in the early global war on terror time.
You fought for our freedoms.
I did for a little bit. Yeah, I did. And that was Sirius, you know, that's when Sirius was the only thing in town. And you know, SiriusXM. So it was Faction and Octane. And so listen to your show quite often. And it was fun. Hey, we get a kick out of it because it made us laugh in times that, you know, you wouldn't, it was hard to laugh, you know, and
I bet
it was good. So that's how when Ian said, hey, we're having Jason Ellis on, I was like, what you talking about? Jason Ellis, skateboarder, the guy, in fact, he's like, I said, yeah, like, man, this is bad. Cause you know, I kind of grew up with you in my time in the military, like a lot of us did. And that's how we would tie, you know, we'd remember home and then we'd come home and listen to you. And you still were off the cuff, politically incorrect. And you spoke our language. So yeah, man, it's, that's why it's an honor to have you on. Cause I like, shit, I used to come home and listen to this guy all the time just to get my head right. And then
well,
we go
I
down.
I appreciate your service, dude. Cause I know I don't know what it's like to do that. Like I've had some tough experiences, but I got some friends that, you know, have been through a lot of stuff, and just hearing their stories, I'm like, different level, man, completely different levels. So,
well, it's trauma's trauma, bro, and you know that, man.
Yeah, you know what? But my trauma's like, it's not as, I don't know how to say it, man. It's just like, you're right, trauma's trauma, but yours is like, it's for the country, you know? Mine was like, I don't even know what it was for, really. It made me get too many tattoos. I don't know.
It's self-realization. Who knows? And thinking back now, you go through that, but we all choose those routes, and that's what happens. We go through it. It is. It's more self-reflection, and that's how we grow. And if that trauma wouldn't have happened, I would probably be that alpha male college football player that still thought, oh, you know, bragging about my 5 touchdowns I scored with Polk High with Al Bundy back in when I was 20 years old. Not saying that's a bad thing, y'all out there. All you old athletes out there. It's good to be an old athlete. But I know Ian's got a lot of questions with me. I want to, a lot of us want to hear your story because we don't know anything more than what we hear from when you had your show and when you currently have your show. And then when you did stuff with Tony Hawk, and a lot of us follow those kind of, because it is an alpha male. It is. Hey, we think it's alpha male. It is. Whether you guys do or not, to us, it's tough shit. It's hard stuff. And it's funny because you got a lot of comedy going on. I mean, Rob Drydeck wouldn't still be, how old is he now? 80 years old, even though he looks like he's 30 and he's still got.
He's younger than me. What are you talking about? He's like 45.
But I know, Ian, but I just want to hear your story of how you got into it. And then you did go through your trauma that I know, you know, I did my research on, of course, I did know about. And because I went through that same stuff, you know, and how you got over it. But, you know, that's me. I know Ian's got specific stuff. So, and here this show, brother, we just roll. You just talk and you say whatever you want. So with me, I guess if Ian, do you want me to start off?
I mean, this has been like a monologue for 5 minutes.
I know. Sorry.
I
just want to know how you got started, bro. How'd you get into it? How did you get the faction? How did it all start from the skateboarding? And then it went to you being a radio, at Sirius XM personality. Do you say radio personality? How'd that happen, man?
Tony Hawk.
It was just that. It was just him, huh?
Tony Hawk made me want to be a skateboarder, and then I got into skateboarding, and I came to America to be a professional skateboarder, and I planned on being the best skateboarder in the world, and then I started skating with Tony Hawk, and I was like, well, second's not bad. And then with the radio thing, it's the crazy thing. Tony Hawk's been like an angel to me in ways where he said, because we started hanging out on the gigantic skate park tour. We always knew each other because we competed with each other for decades. And then one day he was like, hey, man, do you want to be a host on my radio show? There's this satellite thing, and they're giving me a show, and I need a funny guy. You're funny. Do you want to be on the radio? And I was like, yeah, I didn't even really consider myself a funny guy, but okay. And he was like, I'll pay you. And I was like, well, hell yeah. And then as soon as we started it, the first episode was at his ramp, which is still the same building that I skate. It's where we did Hawk versus Wolf, same building.
Wow.
But the New York execs were in the room. And I remember as soon as the show started, this is like, I don't know radio. I was aware of Howard Stern. That was it. Because I saw the movie, but I don't know radio. I don't care. I just know that in skateboarding, it was coming to an end by then because of the way I drank and partied. And I just figured that in the end, I would probably pack boxes for a skateboard company, like in a warehouse or something, because that would probably be the only job that anybody would trust me with. So that was kind of my second plan for after skateboarding. And when I started doing the show that day, the first day, it was Steve Blatter and somebody else was there, but I started talking and I see them whispering to each other in the corner, and I'm like, what's their deal? But I could tell it was about me. And we took a break and Steve comes over and he goes, hey man, that was really good. If you feel like it, turn it up a little bit more. Let's see what you got. And I remember thinking, something's happening right now where they're, because I didn't get it, I was like, I think they're impressed, but I don't know why they would be, because it's just talking and I'm not impressed by people talking, so I don't understand why anybody else would be. And then I think it was pretty much immediately, like I think after that show ended, they were like, would you like a job in radio? And I was like, a job in radio doing what? Like, I'm on this show. And they were like, what, being a DJ? And I remember thinking, a DJ? That's hilarious. Like, I don't like any music that isn't Metallica or AC/DC. So I don't think you realize who you're offering a job to. But at the time, my girlfriend had got pregnant. And, we were having a baby, and I had no plans on any of this, and it was all of a sudden just time to become an adult. Otherwise, again, I probably wouldn't have considered taking the job, but I was like, wow, your skateboard career is not going to pay for a child for the child's entire life. Your skateboard career is probably about to end in the next couple of years, so you might want to branch out. And this is a job where I saw Howard Stern's movie. Radio looks like it could be cool. So yeah, all right, what's it gonna take? And they were like, well, you gotta move to LA. And I was like, LA? If I move
And
to
were you
LA,
living in Australia at the time?
no, I was living in San Diego near Tony's
Okay.
Ranch.
Oh shit. Wow.
Yeah,
Well,
I
that's just
skate. There's no, you can't be a pro skateboarder. It's changed now because of the internet, but when I was a pro, when I was in my prime, if you didn't live in America, you didn't get paid. Because if you're a vert guy, it's not about your video, it's about you competing. You have to compete. And if you can't compete in Australia, nobody's there. So if you go home, you get fired. It's pretty much that cut and dry.
Damn.
So I remember I was telling another skateboarder, I was like, yeah, man, I'm moving to Hollywood. And they were like, whoa, so you're retiring? And I was like, I guess, yeah, man. And it was like really hard for me. It's a weird thing. When you're a vert skater, it's not a very popular thing to do. So skateboard community saying I'm gonna retire is like, who cares, dude? Like, why are you even bringing that up? We don't care who you are. So it wasn't really much to like bring up, or there was definitely no interview like, Jason, tell us what it's like to retire. Like, nobody cared to ask me. I just retired and moved to LA and didn't skate anymore. And it was a hard transition because, I never did it for everybody else. I did it for me. And now I live in Hollywood and I do a radio show Monday to Friday. And it was at the start, it was this guy, Will, was teaching me how to use the desk, because I was running the whole thing, all the boards, teaching me to, and I was doing 4 hours a day. That was the other thing. Most people do a show where they pre-record the breaks in between the music. I was there for 4 hours and I would talk live in between breaks. So I did a show for 4 hours a day, Monday to Friday. And I would have quit several times, but like I said, I got a kid and I got a wife, and I was like, oh my God, dude, like this is, the pressure is on. You cannot fail these people. So I put up with stuff that I normally wouldn't have put up with. But I also had an attitude where, whether I was right or not, I was like, if you fire me, I'll go back to skateboarding. I don't know how that was gonna really work out, but that's how I thought. So the music, I hated it. So I would just sort of say, Well, that was the worst song I've ever heard in my life.
That was what made it good. I mean, seriously, that's what we look like. Man, this sucked, but we're gonna play it anyway. And
yeah,
that's what so, made it awesome, because that was,
dude. There were times where my boss was looking through the glass door and be like,
dude, we didn't
"Really?"
know that.
And I was like, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, dude. I've got a rep. You know
that's
what I mean?
We thought that was part of the. I mean, we thought that was part of the show. We thought that was the stick. That was just
nope.
You being you. That was that's,
nope.
That's
oh, it was me being me. But was... It wasn't me. I got a funny angle. I'm going to talk smack on every band that ever. And then the worst part was my boss goes, instead of saying something bad about them, use MySpace, because I didn't know how to use a computer.
Oh, MySpace.
So he goes, use MySpace and type in the band's name so that you just don't say that's the worst song I've ever heard. So then I started typing in the bands, and I'd see their clothes, and I was like, "Oh, these guys are like the biggest douches ever," and their music sucks. And that was like,
"That's so hey,
that's amazing." That, well, so you know what?
I gotta ask who the worst band ever made, though. I gotta ask now because I'll forget who was the. Will Ferrell, my wife's text, love me sexy. Come, forgot to silence my phone. Don't worry about silencing your phone on our show. It doesn't make do me shit. Since, but. Who was the worst band then? Who do you remember that was the worst that you're like, that was just trash? And there was there one that turned out that was actually successful that was, you said was the worst band ever?
I mean, most of the bands that were being played on Faction were already successful.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like yeah, if you make
true.
It there, then.
True.
But I
that's
think
true.
There was a band, man, I think there was a band. I ended up fighting them in a boxing fight and I beat them all up by myself.
And you're
fun.
Having trouble recalling the name of the band? Like, that's like a highlight moment.
Yeah, because they didn't make it. They were like, I don't know what they were. They sucked. They were just a bunch of kids. But I kept making fun of them because they were so bad. And then we started bringing them up on the air as if they were big because they were so small. And it was funny to say, oh, wow, it's them again. But I didn't like AFI. I didn't like... Yeah. Who was it? They didn't deserve it. It was more, I came from, even in my skateboard career, I would argue with people when we drink. I was really good at arguing. So even if I was wrong, I would still somehow seem like I was right about any band versus Metallica. I could just prove you wrong.
Hell yeah. I got the Metallica book over there, the Master of Puppets tour. But you know what I was gonna say, just when you were recalling your experience there and they were like, we gotta give this guy a show and put him on air, I almost feel like the dynamic of you and Tony Hawk is almost like what we were talking about when we started, the dynamic of Howard and Artie, in that Howard lives a very like straight life, you know, he's got a wife, he's got kids. And Artie was a mess. Artie would go on the air and tell his heroin stories and all that. And that's what made the show exciting. Tony Hawk seems like a regular family man. And you're able to go on the show and have these like wild stories, which is not who you are now. But at the time, I think was your appeal.
Yeah. I mean, I think back then Tony was still, it got pointed out to me once by his manager at the time, because I started a band on my channel called Tony Hawk's Taint Stick. and then my show started getting big and I was still on the show with Tony, and his manager at the time calls me and goes, hey, so you started a band, huh? And I go, yeah. And she goes, Tony Hawk's Taint Stick. And I go, yeah, it's pretty funny. She goes, yeah, no, that is very funny. Did you know that Tony sells clothing at Kohl's? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, okay. And then I go, wait, are you trying to tell me something? And she's like, just think about it for a second. And I was like, right. So I should call the band Taint Stick then. And she goes, I think that's a great idea. And that was kind of there was a time there where Tony's demographic was a lot younger. Like now, obviously, there's a lot of young people that still look up to Tony, but also people realize that Tony is, I mean, he's a granddad, he's a man, and he's not hiding. Like, yeah. The guy has a couple of beers every now and then. Like, the dude cusses. He's not a saint by any means. He's a good dude, but he doesn't have to hide it as much as he used to. And it got to the point, that's why I stepped away from the show, because people were calling Tony's show and saying things that I was saying on my show that were just like, they weren't appropriate for children. And as a person, I am gross. I have come from a pretty ghetto upbringing, but I know I don't like being inappropriate around children. Like, there's a time and a place. Like, people will say to, like, "Hey, man, don't cuss on this show," and I'm like, "Yeah, no problem, man." They're like, "Really? You can do that?" I'm like, "What? Yeah." Like, I grew up with like two brothers. Like, I'm the kind of person that if there's people cussing in a restaurant and there's children there, I'll tell them to, you know what I mean, watch their language. And people look at me like, "Really?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not a complete animal." Like, it's not that bad.
I get that. And you know what else I was going to say when I was talking about how you're now calling the show Ellis 2.0, I've been listening to the show and I feel like the guy that you were really may not even appeal to this audience. And the guy you are now very much does. And when you were saying you can't really relate to the military thing, when I was listening to the newer shows, which are very much more like introspective and therapeutic, you were talking about how some of the stuff you're going through and have gone through in recent years, you're like, "I don't have anyone to talk to because my best friend who I spoke to about all that stuff is dead." And I remember you saying, "This is why I kind of relate to a lot of military guys now."
Yeah.
And when I heard that, I was like, I think it would be interesting to have Jason on the show because I think he actually does relate to this audience, which is kind of a mashup of civilian like myself and militaries and contractors like Chris.
I think when I was in my darkest time, the people that made the most sense to me were my military friends, because they would, you know, it's a weird thing. When you have people die that you love, people that are that have never experienced that, they don't know what to say when they see you. But when you've lost a lot of friends and family, and you have a friend that loses a friend, loses a loved one, I can talk to people about it because I know what it's like. And I think when you haven't experienced that, and I'm not saying it's a good thing or anything, I'm just saying when you have gone through a lot of it and you have a friend that's lost a loved one, I can look at him in the eye and say, "Hey, man, I'm really sorry. If you need me, I'm here." I'm not scared to say it because I know what it's like to walk around in those shoes. And I really wish that somebody would have said that to me, you know?
Did nobody... I mean, if they're not comfortable around you, they can't. And that's what you just said, honestly, is perfect, because you just said, "Hey, if you need me, I'm here." And you didn't go more than that. I think with a lot of us,
there's nothing else you can do. You know that. There's nothing else you can say. Like, you can't, if I could snap my fingers and make the pain go away, I would. But I know that that's not how it works.
No.
You need time. You need to work on it. You need to deal with it. You need to face it.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's a perfect way to say it. So that's when you were having the most of your problems with drugs and alcohol, right? Was it that time? I know you've been through with a lot. I know you've been through some of it throughout, but how bad was it there? And then how did you get out of it? Because I've had buddies that have gone down that road and they didn't get out of it and they're not here anymore. I've lost 33 suicide from veteran buddies, 33 suicides. And we did everything we could and they just didn't pull themselves out of it. So how did you, man? What did you do? Or did somebody finally come and say, "Hey, man, unfuck yourself"? And that's what happened to me. I had a ranger buddy say, "Hey, you need to unfuck yourself, dude. Get your shit together." Or did you it just happened one day and you got up and like, I'm not going to let this beat me?
I mean, I've always been the kind of person that everything's a fight to me. If something bad happens, I can get sad, I can get down, but tomorrow I'll wake up and I'll fight it. You know, I'm not losing ever. I don't like losing to anything. But to me, I've had a lot of rock bottoms in my life, but the last one was, you know, losing my job at Sirius, and you know, I had a divorce before that, and I gave her a lot of money, and I didn't pay taxes, so I paid off the taxes, and by the time I got back on top, I got divorced again. And fired. So then I had no money. I lost my wife, and it's the third wife, which is like, dude, you know what? It's your fault. Like, these women were there for you and you pushed them away because of your addictions. Cause I'm not a bad person. I just, my addictions make me do things that hurt the people I care about the most. And yeah, I've been running since I was like 11. Like, I don't want to face my childhood, so I've been using drugs and alcohol and sex to not sit in my own head. Like, the worst place in my life has been in my own head. It's kind of like half the reason, like, it ain't so bad for me to jump off some stupid skateboard thing where I could get really hurt, because guess what? When I'm doing that, I'm not in my own head. So all those things, and when you get hurt, or the consequences are like really, really bad, I don't really like me. So who cares if I like knock myself senseless? Like, looking back now, I see that, but at the time, that's not how I saw it. But the last time, when I lost my wife and the money and the credit card debt and all this stuff is starting to like stack up, and I'm sitting in a house by myself. And there was a couple of weeks there, maybe even a month, where, I hate saying this, but I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I just would put my gun on the table every morning and think of reasons not to do it. A couple of times I grabbed it, put, you know what I mean? I put it in my mouth. And so I would have done it, but I had kids, and I was like, you do that. And like, because the reason I was thinking about doing that is because I hurt the people I cared about the most, and if I kill myself, then I won't hurt anybody anymore. But then I realize, you do that, and on your way out, you're gonna hurt the people that mean the most to you. This is your last goodbye, is to ruin their lives. So I was like, well, now there's, you know, I mean, when I realized that and was like, there's no way out. I can't get out. Like, the only way out is to hurt my children. So that means there is no way out. I am stuck in this, in me, for the rest of my life. So are you going to sit here and sulk about it? Or are you going to figure out a way to, once and for all, like, being 50 and going, dude, your track record shows, like, you thinking you can do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, you end up going down the same road where you end up doing too many drugs, you sleep with too many people, you don't know how to say no to anything, and you hurt you. I was afraid to date somebody because I was like, you're gonna do it again to some new person. You're gonna love them and then ruin their lives. Like, you just ruin people's lives. So that's when I'm not a religious man. I started going to AA, and I was like, I hate everybody here, and I hate the way they talk, and people got their stories, and I'm like, you ain't been through nothing compared to me, dude. Like, your story sucks. And, you know what I mean? And it's like, hey man, can I talk to you after that? And I'm like, no, I don't really want to talk to you. You're a bitch. And I was dark as hell, but I kept going because I knew if I kept going, I wouldn't use. And then it's slowly but surely, you know what I mean? I kicked everything, drugs, alcohol, I kicked weed, and then the last one to go was sleeping around, because I was like, sleeping around, that's not an addiction. I used to say, only people that say sex addiction's a real thing is people that get caught cheating with on their wives. And then I was like, you know what? Let's just try not doing it to see if it's a problem. And within 3 days, I was like, oh wow, it's a problem. Like, I was like, I immediately wanted to do drugs again. I was like, I'm freaking out, because I realized I use that to run. I use that to not think about my problems, and then I wake up in the morning with more problems because I've slept with somebody and they might like me, and I'm gonna lie to keep them sleeping with me. So that's when the real work started, when I realized. I went to a sex and love addiction meeting, and people that got up and talked, I was so angry because everybody that talked sounded exactly like I think. And I was like, son of a bitch. I've got that one as well. I'm like, what am I not addicted to? You know what I mean? Like, I was like, everything, dude. I'm addicted to everything. Like, I am such a mess. Like, just end it. And then I was like, get it going. And then I got a sponsor. I had two. The second one was a big guy, shaved head, tattooed. He used to own nightclubs. He was a heavy guy, and he'd been through a lot. And he just took me under his wing. He actually had a heart replacement, and he didn't tell me at the time, but His heart is when they give you a heart replacement, you get 10 years, and he was on his ninth year.
Oh, shit.
And he didn't tell me that. And everything that he, every piece of advice he would give me, he gave it to me in this way where it's a gift, but he doesn't know. He's thinking he's got a couple of days left, a year at the most. So everything he says is like, this is your last day. And that's,
that
if you can live your life like today's your last day, every decision you make is the right decision.
Yeah.
Because you're not playing anymore. It's not like, well, I'll get to it tomorrow. No, you'll do it now. Like, if you need to apologize, or I'll build, nah, don't build up to it. Do it now. So he saved me, man. Like, and he died like 2 weeks before my first year of sobriety.
Wow.
And that was like really hard, but because I talked to him so much and he helped me so much, I can hear him. Like when I've got to make a decision, because the first year is definitely probably the hardest, but like when I've got to make a decision about something, I just call him in my head, and I know, because he wasn't too hard to figure out. I knew what he would say, so then I would just do that. And then he was a big guy on the prayer thing, and that was the hardest thing to me. And it was a couple of things that saved me. One, I went to a AA meeting in a church, and there was a big sign on the wall that said, God is love. And I took a person that I used to film OnlyFans with, like, because she needed help, because those were the people that I was hanging out with. They were all not their fault, but
yeah,
bad people, negative vibrations. Anyway, I see this sign and I go, God is love. I'm like, I can pray to love. Like, I believe in love, you know? So that started helping me pray. And then his sponsor, he had a big speech one day, and he was a football coach. And I never played American football. I'm from Australia, but I do know UFC, and I know John Jones gets in a 3-point stance. And this guy would always go, I get up in the morning, I get in a 3-point stance, and I get fired up for the day, because this is the day, you know what I mean? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to get in a 3-point stance, man. I'm going to pray to God in a 3-point stance, and I'm getting fired up. Because I'm going to do this, man. And he really helps. So I pray like 10 times a day in a 3-point stance. But then the craziest one that happened is I'm in a 3-point stance. I'm in my backyard. So this is like I'm sober. I'm not sleeping with people. I live in a house by myself that I can't afford because I'm stuck in a lease. And
in
my
LA,
ex left
right?
me.
So.
Yeah. And I'm paying my ex more than I can afford. And I got like $250,000 of credit card debt. Like, I'm drowning, damn, dude. The podcast is not doing any money, not making any money. Like, people hate me because I'm half a gay.
Well, because you're being you. And by the way, could I just say, yeah, and I don't want to interrupt what you're saying, but the reason I think this is so powerful is because for the people who know you, you represented, honestly, the height of debauchery. And I think you're here today to say, like, that is not the path to take. And no one did it more extreme than you. And in no way do you want to glamorize this lifestyle anymore.
No, that was the way it was, man. Like, when I slept with people, I slept with four or five people at a time. And if I could get one of them to pass me a joint while it was happening, I wanted it because I needed extra. I needed someone to add something to it. And that was the other thing. It was never enough. There was never a day where I was like, okay, five's good. It wasn't. It was never. No. I was like, five, what's seven like?
What's seven? Like, it's always one more.
Hey, it was always, it would never stop. And I was never actually happy. I was always, if I made $1 million, I'd be happy because I signed the deal. If I got a cover, if I won a fight, if I did something cool where everybody recognized me that day, that was cool. People would send me I called my kid Alice. I got a tattoo of your face on my back. That meant nothing to me. It wasn't enough. I always needed more. So anyway, getting back to the story, because now I don't do nothing, man. I got a girlfriend. I'm very happy with her. I have no interest in sleeping with anybody else. If you DM me your titties, you should not, because I feel sorry for you, because because it's sad. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know me and look at me. Like, why the hell would you send me that? That's you got your own problems. I can send you to a meeting because you need help.
Send you to me. God is love, man. God is love. Yeah.
But dude, speaking of God is love, so I'm praying right in the morning, and I know I'm going to Tony's to skate, and I'm doing a podcast, and you know, Tony's got a big ramp. And I don't skate that often, and I'm older, and it's not that dangerous, but it's a little dangerous. And I've had a few concussions in the last couple of years. And you're talking about a guy that's already had like 35, and then you get a couple more in your 50s. You're like, dude, how do I still know who I am? So I'm praying in my 3-point stance, and I never do this because I usually just pray to be of some service to somebody. But I was like, hey, God, if it's possible, like, I'm going to push it a little harder today on the ramp. So if you could just keep me safe, that'd be much appreciated. That's it. Get fired up. Off I go. I go to the ramp. I'm playing around. I get knocked out bad. Like, I'm out for like 15 minutes. Whoa. And this has happened to me a few times where I wake up and it's Tony Hawk going, hey, man, you know where you are? And I'm like, son of a bitch. I know every time I hear you say that, it's because I just got knocked out. And he's like, yep. And, you know, he makes me no podcast. He's like, I'm going to make you wait till I know you're good. And then I was like, I'm good. He's like, okay. So then I drive home. And when I get in the car, a voice says, kill yourself. And I'm like, that's not cool. But also being knocked out that many times, I understand, like, I've had concussions where if it rains, I cry. Or if I'm in the shower, I cry. So I know that, like, this is a part of depression that happens when you get a head injury. So I wasn't too fazed by it. But then I drove for 3 hours home, and this voice just keeps saying it. And now it's whispering it to me, and I'm like, man, this is eerie. Like, it's not cool. And then I go home by myself. I want to run, because I got a voice telling me to kill myself, and I'm just sitting there going, no, I thought we made our decision on that one. We're not doing that, you know? And then I went to bed, and it was still saying it when I went to sleep. And then I woke up in the morning, and a voice was like, hey, man, you'll be okay. Like, you hit your head really hard yesterday. Just eat some food, rest, and it'll be okay. And the craziest thing about it, for the first time ever, that voice, to me, I don't care what anyone else thinks, to me, that voice was distinctly different than the voice that was talking to me last night. And one was evil and one was good. And ever since that day, when I pray, I hear that voice. And the other voice, you know, it's like, you should hit that chick up. And I'm like, oh, I know you. You're the one that told me to kill myself on the way home the other day. So I don't take that voice serious. And the more that happened, the less that voice showed up. So now I don't even, like, I get in a 3-point stance and I already start receiving what I should do today. And it's always the right decision. It's always a positive. It's not about me, you know, like, it's in God's hands, you know, like, I don't have a, please God, can my podcast be successful? Like, I don't care. I know that that's not what's important in my life. Like, please God, can somebody come along and pay off my credit card debt? Like, I don't care. I don't care if I get popular. I don't care if I get money. I don't care if I get famous. I don't care about any of that anymore. I care about my kids. I care about my kid's mother, and I care about my girlfriend and my friends and my dogs and my cats and my horse and anybody else who's like a good person and needs help. I'm there for them. And that's, you know, if I can help somebody, if I can teach them to skate, if I can teach them to fight, if I can help somebody with sobriety, you know, I mean, if I get to do stand up with my friends and write a cool joke, like, you know, if my girlfriend makes a meal, like, things where having a conversation with my son for 15 minutes and I hang up the phone and I'm like, that was, not only was it awesome, but it lasts, it stays. Like, I don't, it's not like a hit, it stays. Like, I'm always, you know, my son sent me a text the other day just saying how proud he is of me for staying sober and for working so hard.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, this kid's 16, man, and he's sending that stuff to me. It's like, that There's no movie. There's no money. There's no, I mean, they could have a pill tomorrow that grow my hair back. I don't give a shit, dude. I just don't care about any of it anymore. And it's made me less judgmental, and which has caused a thing because now I live a conservative lifestyle. I said this on a promo the other day, and everyone's like, "Whoa, you're a right wing," and I'm like, "Dude, I'm not on anyone's wing, okay? Like, I know from experience, which has also triggered a lot of people. I used to have OnlyFans. I used to hang out with a lot of OnlyFans people. If you want to do OnlyFans, if you want to be in porn, congratulations, go ahead, do it. But in my experience, and I didn't read it in a book, I lived it. None of them are happy. And it takes you down a dark road where you end up using and abusing yourself. And I don't really see too many people in the end looking back and going, nice decision. I'm sure there's somebody out there that has a different story, and congratulations to them. I just know that average, if you do statistics, in my actual experience with all meeting them all and hanging out with these people face to face, they're not very happy, and they got into it because they weren't happy in the first place. They don't really like themselves. It's kind of like, I'll throw myself off a bridge into a ramp because I don't really care what happens to me anyway. And that's like, in our OnlyFans, they'll pay you to do more stuff, stuff that you would normally not want to do, stuff you'll put on video that you look back and regret. Or sleep with a bunch of people that want to sleep with a bunch of other people because you're all unhappy. And this is a thing that my sponsor told me before he passed away. You've got a watermelon hole in your chest and you try to fill it with oranges. And I was like, when he told me that, it was like, it just never left me because I was like, oh, that's exactly what I'm doing. Like, I've
And the thing
always been.
that's, I was gonna say, the thing that's fucked up, because I heard you talk about this on your show, because you've been very candid about all this, is you said like that doesn't represent you anymore. And you've told people who have that material online, like, hey, as a friend who hung out with you, could you take that stuff off the internet? I don't want it out there anymore. And they're like, yeah, but I get paid through this. And you're like, wow, like, this is how you value me, that you won't take something down when I ask you to because I don't want it out there anymore. And I thought that was pretty powerful to say, and kind of shows the mentality of those people, that money over everything.
It's a lot. I've learned a lot of lessons even in the last week, man. Just talking about my stance on politics and having some liberal friends saying, "Well, we'll be having a talk next time we see each other." And I'm like, "You got my phone number, dude. You don't need to be saying that on my
On
Instagram."
Instagram, exactly.
Like,
Exactly.
you know you're doing that for your own satisfaction, and you're being triggered by stuff that isn't real. Like, I got Republican friends, I got people at Black Rifle that have fought for this country and are friends with people that are in the Republican Party, like deep. And if I need to stay at their house, they will pick me up from the airport and let me stay. And if I post that I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, they will not say on my Instagram, "We're going to need to talk about this." So you're making yourself look bad, liberal guys. Like, where I'm like, dude, just live and let live. Like, I don't, I like, I, that's the thing I've noticed. I'm also being a comedian on the road. It doesn't, it's not real. Like, this thing on social media where everyone's mad at each other for voting for one person or the other. This is what really, when you say something bad about somebody on social media, as soon as you put your phone down, you're thinking about yourself. You know how I know that? Because I'm a human too, you dickhead. And when I don't like Nickelback, I don't spend the rest of my day stewing about it. I just say to some person that they suck, and then I go back worrying about my own life. Because that's what we all do. It's all lies, and I'm sick of it all. People reacting like that too, because I hang out with Tim Pool now. He's the guy that sponsors me. I don't know who Tim Pool is. I went to his skate park and he was like, "Hey man, do you want to skate for me?" And I was like, "You know I'm old, right?" And he was like, "Yeah man, but you're a legend. Like, I'd love to like give you a pro model." And I was like, "You gonna pay me?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'll pay you." And I was like, "Oh shit, okay." And now I'm stoked. And when we hang out, he doesn't ask me what are my feelings about Trump. Like, he doesn't, he just says, "You want to skate?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And then that's it. And everyone's like, "That's it. I'm done listening to your show now." And I'm like, go away
go
then.
Away. Yeah.
Because I don't, because I don't, the show doesn't make any money. I don't, the people are like, yeah, you sold out. And I'm like, if I sold out, where's the money?
Yeah.
I'm reverse rich. I have zero. I owe $250,000. I don't make any money.
Oh, I'm going back to your son thing. I had that with my 16-year-old because I missed so many years of his life being deployed. And they are right that when I was divorced from my wife, I mean, your story resonates with me for, now you did it for a little longer. I only probably had a 3-year stretch of that, but it was, you always felt like you were trying to fill yourself this hole that was empty. And man, my boy, I remember when we finally buried the hatchet when he was 16 and how fulfilled I finally felt. And that's when I reconciled with my wife and we got back together and everything worked. But that's what makes me happier than anything. You're still funny as shit. And I remember when I was listening to you back in the still the same Jason L. It's hilarious. But that impresses me more than anything, brother. That right there with you and your father and you recognizing that with your son and how it made you feel. Because I remember feeling like that as well. It's like, man, I do have all the money in the world, man. I feel like I'm filled up, yeah. And that was cool. And
also, his mother likes me again, and we haven't been cool for 20 years.
That's cool. Yeah, you that's know? Cool.
And also, I can tell my girlfriend that means a lot to me, and she doesn't think it's weird because she is also a level-headed human being that thinks that that's a great thing for a father to have with the mother. You know.
Yeah. Oh, the kids see that. I mean, like your son, he's 16. He's saying, "Dad, I'm proud of you for your sobriety." So you don't think he hadn't noticed that forever when you thought he wasn't noticing it?
We all think we're getting away with it.
Didn't get away with shit.
Yeah, I was like, I never did it around the kids. They knew whole time.
They're smart. And also, I mean, you being a public figure, people see that. I have to ask this because you're being very open about it and people are just going to wonder. You've said once again on your show, because I do listen, that like at the height of Sirius, you were making around $1 million a year, I believe is what
more
you
than
said.
That.
Okay, so over that, how did you lose it all? How are you in debt now?
Well, like I said, there was my baby mama. I gave her a lot of money, and when I gave her so much money that I didn't pay taxes. So then I had penalties, and then I paid that off. And once I'd completely paid everything off and now was making my own money that was just mine and paying regular up to date taxes, I think it was only a year in before I got fired. And I was living with the other wife check to check, buying.
Yeah.
But living like a jerk off. Like I wasn't putting money away. I was like, I'm going to be on Sirius for the rest of my life. That's why I stayed, because I was like, I need, security. Like, you guys are going to keep me, and when Stern retires, I'm going to be the guy. And the COVID came, and they were like, bye. And I was like, wait. I thought we were doing, like, a 15-year anniversary, and Arnold Schwarzenegger and all these other people were going to be on the show. And they're like, yeah, that's not happening. We're letting you go.
And I feel like Sirius has made some really shitty decisions, man, because so many of the people I worked with there are no longer there. And, you know, they're giving, what, like tens of millions of dollars to the caller daddy chick, Alex Cooper. And, look, like, I know the show was huge for a while, but I don't think it's going to be worth that payoff that she's getting paid more than a Howard Stern, who has decades and decades of a fan base that he built over time. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could care, but it's not working out.
Yeah.
No, man. What is your boy, is he going the same route as dad? Not on the craziness, but is he going down like skating, and or is he an athlete? No. Is he doing, is he going and playing rugby?
He's a boxer.
Oh, no shit. Nice. So is he going UFC route, or is that what he's thinking about doing?
No way. I mean, I already know, like, you can't tell your kid to not do something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Then he will do it. But I have advice. He's been around my friends in the gym. He understands, like his mother is married to a very successful man. They make a lot of money, and they live in Beverly Hills. And wow. You don't, you know, like... I don't know. I've said it to him in a nicer way, but like, you're not. You gotta have something wrong with you to want to make it in that. You know, it's a bad idea. Like, I'm gonna be a pro fighter. You're dumb. You know that, right? Like, you want to be a pro skateboarder? It's not the smartest decision that you could make. Like, you should probably get a passion that doesn't involve bodily harm and
It's
like
like,
work really hard at it, and then, you know, make money being an entrepreneur of sorts. That's what I would recommend. So he's got hands, he's really good, and he definitely has like my bloodline. Like, you crack him, he comes for you. So he's got aggression, and he's definitely like athletically inclined, but he has a lot of common sense. Like, even when we snowboard and stuff, I can tell he'll add something up and be like, it's not, that's not worth it. Like, I'm not at that level. And, you know, when I was his age, like, I need, it's the saddest thing ever. But like, if I do something crazy, I think that you'll love me because I don't think anybody loves me. So I can justify doing something death defying because if I do it and no one else will do it, I have this like this delusional thought that everybody will love me now, you know?
yeah,
It's like, that's like, it's gone now, you know? Like, if I'm gonna do something dangerous, it's because I don't know how much longer I'm gonna be here, and I like testing myself, but if it's gonna involve me dying or like getting drastically hurt to the point where I don't remember my children's names, well, then I'm just not gonna do it.
that's smart, right? That's common sense.
Yeah, it
And
took a
so
while, but yeah,
it does.
thank
It took you 50
you.
years. What, 51 years?
Took a little
Hey.
to 53. I'll be 54 in a month.
So maybe the TBI is a good thing for, maybe that's what fixed your shit, dude. Make it a big common sense. The too many bangs on the head. That fixes a lot of us, man. Too many concussions. Like, you know what? Maybe I don't need another concussion, so I shouldn't
Well, I'm still
do
going to get another concussion.
it.
It's just got to be justified. Like, I'm not going to stop skating. Yeah.
And what do you have coming up as far as skating goes, like, people can look forward to? And are you the skate shows, or is it just going to be social media stuff? I don't follow
Yes.
that route. I can't skate for shit. You put me
I'm
on there,
not.
I'm going to break
You
another
ain't.
hip.
I'm not a hired gun for like a contest. It's over. But I still skate. To me, it's more of a, if you're 30, 40, you know, and you're like, I can't skate anymore, I post videos that says, yeah, you can.
That's cool.
So that's more my angle on that. Like, I know Black Rifle want me to jump out of a helicopter into this ramp in the next
That'd
couple of
be
months.
cool.
And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. So.
Tell fucking Evan and Matt's old asses to do it. Let them break their damn backs doing that stuff over there,
They
man.
won't do it. Bucky, he was
I
like, we
know.
want you and Bucky to do it. And Bucky was like, you're on your own, Ellis. And I was like, okay. I assume that's
Exactly.
Bucky Larson, right? I remember
Bucky
Kodak.
Lassick.
Vlasic, yeah. I'm like, what? I'm thinking of, I don't know. I'm mixing a few things up. I don't want to keep you here too long, but the last thing I at least want to get into is the stand-up comedy stuff and how you got into that route. And I'm also wondering, like, it's very apparent that when someone from outside that realm enters the stand-up comedy realm, comedians are pretty harsh about it. I mean, we've seen Brendan Schaub get like just pulverized when he put out that Gringo Poppy special, and people being like, you are not a comedian. Stick to fighting. Are you experiencing the same things, like going out to the Comedy Store, doing stand up, and now you're about to tour?
No, not at all. I pay my dues, man. I didn't come in. First of all, it's a little bit of Brendan's fault. Like, people that were his friends that were in the game for a long time, they told him not to do that.
Yeah,
And
including Joe
he
Rogan.
wasn't.
They and but I, but also, if Showtime throws you money and says put together
Still
a
don't
stand-up
do it. That's the
special.
thing, man. Like, money don't what? It's not, this is a real game. Like, comedy is a real thing to me. That's why I've been in fighting, I've been in skateboarding, I've been in racing cars, and I'm not, the shortcut is not real. It's not realistic. Like, if you take a shortcut, you'll be out just as quick as you got in. And I'm not doing comedy. That's the other thing. I'm not doing it to be famous. I don't care what you think. I don't care if I make money out of it. I am in comedy for one reason, because I want to be really good at it. I want to master the craft. That's it. So I do open mics. I go to alleyways and do comedy at midnight. And now that
That's
I'm 5 years
awesome.
deep, like sometimes I do shows with Whitney Cummings, and then the next day I'm in an alleyway doing comedy in front of seven people. Like, I don't have an ego to it, you know? Like, I'm putting in the work. And like, I just started talking about doing a special because a bunch of my peers were like, it's time for you to do a special. And I was like, I don't want to be a Brendan Schaub. And someone was like, dude, the guy had been in it for 3 years and he had two specials. Like, that was not a good decision on his behalf, but because he probably got offered a bunch of money, he took it, and fair enough. But also, like, if you bow out of comedy, look, Brendan's a nice guy. But if you're going to bow out of comedy after, I don't know, 5 years, you're not in it. You know what I mean? You're not, like, as a guy that was a skateboarder, I can barely walk when I get up in the morning. I'm going to the ramp tomorrow. I don't give a shit. Like, I'll die skateboarding. And comedy, when you do bad, you don't go to hospital. So I'll be doing this until the end for sure. And I love it. I love writing jokes. I love bombing. I love everything about it. The only difference is that I don't care about smoking weed in the parking lot. I don't drink beers. I don't high five for 5 hours after it. I write jokes. I go there. I handle my business, and then I leave because I don't. I also don't care about a groupie. I don't care if you think that I'm very funny and you want to take a photo of my face. I don't give a shit. I'm not doing it to be cool. I'm doing it because I love comedy. That's it. I love it, man. Like, I love watching it. I love going to the store and watching people do stuff. Or, you know, I mean, I like the legends of it. I like the rats in it. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, Kill Tony's this. I'm like, I like Kill Tony. I like Joe Rogan. I like everybody that does comedy. I don't care what version of it is, what it is that you're doing. You're doing it. You're living it. And I don't know how, you know what I mean? If I have tomorrow, this could be my last night. I'm gonna appreciate everybody's angle. And more power to you if you make it in a year. More power to you if it took you 25 years. Awesome. I appreciate your grit. You know, like, I just don't care to hate on anybody anymore, man.
Nah.
And I can tell you, it's so much more fun to be
Good
alive.
line. I mean, it's a fun line. It is, man.
I just like, you know, people are like, you hear so and so, and I'm like, what? He did this and he did that. I'm like, okay, like, what do you want me to do? Kill him? Like, I don't care, man. Like, let him do it. Let them all do it.
And one
It's
thing
his
I will say
passion.
with you talking about going to the comedy store, you know, I've gone to LA, and LA just has the most awesome comedy scene. Like, and I'm in New York, but I think LA is the pinnacle, man. And the fact that, like, while I was there, you could go to the improv, you could go to the comedy store, and like in one night, you could see David Spade, Tim Dillon, Whitney Cummings, Nikki Glaser, and that's what they do night after night. Like, they go around the country and headline arenas in some cases. And when they're in LA, they're playing to a tiny room night after night, just working out that material. So when you see a comedian out on the road, it was weeks and months of getting that material correct. And in some cases, years at the Comedy Store, at the Improv, until they felt like, okay, I have an hour here that's good.
It's real work, man. Like, and I love it. Yeah,
That's
like
a, well, that's
I
a.
get it. Like, Richard Pryor used to be there, dude. Like, we're
Yeah.
talking about that place has like the greatest legends of comedy that ever existed, that made us what we are now, and that's the building that contained them. Like, it's legendary. And I walk in and they let me in for free. You know, people are like, oh man, you're not a paid regular. And I'm like, I don't deserve to be, but they let me in for free, and I get to, like, almost everybody there knows who I am now. I'm like a little kid in a candy store. I'm having fun every time.
That's cool, man. If you've been successful, you still are successful, and because you have passion. And what veterans and the veterans that listen to this, brother, are going to get is that you have that drive that I'm going to get up. I don't want to lose. And I think a lot of veterans need to hear that. A lot of us, a lot of them that are, because they're on their luck and they just don't want to get up and try anymore. It's like, no, you get up and keep trying. No matter how bad it sucks, you keep doing it. And that's how you're going to be successful. And that's, again, that's impressive to me, because I just know you from listening to your show and all that. And that was, to me, that resonates more than anything, because that you would have made a good ranger, brother. You would have.
Wow,
You remind
that's the good. That's the
you.
greatest compliment I've ever had
You
in my entire life.
you do remind. We used to work with the Aussie SA. I used to work with the Aussie SAS guys, and you remind me exactly of them. Even the tattoos,
It's
motherfuckers were hardcore, and I love those sons of bitches, man. They were
funny.
very.
I feel like every time I hang out with guys at Black Rifle, I feel like we're very similar,
You
even
are.
though we're
You
not
are.
exactly.
You are, you are the mentality, and that you just get up and you get kicked in the balls and you get up and you try again. And
That's what it's like when you're 53 and you skate for 4 hours and you wake up in the morning and you're like, I can't, but I go, shut up, Jason, you can. And then we
just
go.
throw some Motrin in, dude. Throw some Ranger candy in and go fucking skate. That's what you do. That's what you do. That's what you do. But
I gotta go, guys. I gotta go to
Yeah, no, we
yeah,
appreciate it, Jason.
appreciate it,
Thanks for going a
Jason.
full hour. And I'll just say the
Thanks, bud.
jasonellis.com for all stand-up comedy dates and everything else, at Wolfmate on
Yep.
Instagram, at EllisMate on X, and check out the Jason Ellis Show, available
Yeah.
on all podcast
God
platforms.
bless you,
And
brother.
really appreciate
Back
it,
at you,
man.
mate. Thanks for having me, guys.
Roger that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jason.
That's all for this episode of Battleline Podcast. But we're always posting new content on social media. Follow us on Instagram at Battleline Podcast and on Twitter at Battleline Pod. That's an order. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes up every Tuesday. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. Believe in yourself. Face all challenges head on. And as always, never quit.